It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about comic books and graphic novels. And the world of comic books and graphic novels seems to be ever expanding. To help us understand this world, we've invited Phil Hester. He's a comic book artist and writer who lives in North English, Iowa, to give us some insight. He's worked on Wonder Woman, Superman Confidential, Nightwing, El Diablo, Batman Legends of the Dark Knight, so many other books, and many independent titles as well. And he's back with us today. Phil, thank you so much for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
And I think we've talked about this before, but give us a little bit of background on your interest in comic books. When did you first start reading them, and what drew you?
Oh, I started when I was kind of a nerdy little kid and living in small town Iowa and small town Oklahoma. And, you know, I felt connected to this larger world of superheroes. And it just seemed so, like, fun to be able to, like, go down to the grocery store, the convenience store every week and see what's new and sort of for a quarter or 35 cents to sort of open up a new world to myself, you know, for the afternoon. So, yeah, that's when I started, when I was a kid. And then about age 12 or 13, I started, you know, I'd always been interested in drawing myself. And at 12 or 13, it dawned on me that, like, oh, there are actual human beings that do this. And maybe I could be one of these human beings. And I started making my own comics for just myself and my friends at that age and just kept doing it all the way through high school and college and then tricked people into paying me for it.
Now, of course, anybody who visits a comic book shop or has bought one in recent years will know that 25 cents is not the going price for a comic book.
It was barely that when I was a kid. Right? Yeah. I would make myself out older than I even am. But yeah.
But you don't see comic books on the newsstand, and maybe you don't see newsstands anymore. But when did we first start seeing the world of comic books and graphic novels really expanding beyond Archie and some of the superheroes that we think about?
I think there was this sort of underground explosion, like in the 60s, that sort of whole counterculture, you know, growth that went on at that time. And comics was a small part of that as well. And comics started to be sold in other places besides the newsstand then. It started to be sold in, like, head shops and, you know, bookstores and places like that. And that sort of showed comic book creators there were alternative avenues to getting your work out there and that you didn't have to do all these squeaky clean superheroes. You could do other kinds of stories. And I was lucky that when I was coming up, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles blew up. And they were a small, independent, black and white comic book. And they started this thing called the Black and White Explosion in the mid-80s, which was basically anybody with a credit card could, you know, become a comic book publisher. And all these little small kind of semi-underground, we called them street level at that time because they weren't legit like Marvel and DC, but they weren't dirty like underground comics.
Right.
But so all these sort of like new voices started springing up in the 80s. And that's when I was in college. And I actually started working in comics when I was in college on those sort of street level books. And it was a really exciting time. And it gave rise to all the voices that became mainstream voices. And a lot of this stuff even that we see, like if you look at that, the latest Captain America movie, Winter Soldier, largely based on the work of Ed Brubaker, a writer who got his start in that kind of on a book called Low Life that was done in that sort of 80s, 90s black and white explosion time. So all those kind of outsider voices have become insider mainstream voices now.
As we're talking about the world of comic books and how very big it is, we'd love to hear from you as well. If there's a title that has really captured your imagination that is not one of the titles that everybody knows about, give us a call. Share it with us. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So as these titles, you know, people started being able to publish, this explosion in the 1980s. Did you see this comic book shop culture begin to rise where there was a place where you could go and see what was going on?
Yeah, that's when it sort of, you know, really took off. It's, you know, all over the United States was that sort of mid-80s period. And also, I have to say, Marvel and DC also at that time saw that growing, and they started to do books that were for direct, you know, limited distribution only. They made books that weren't for sale on the newsstand to sort of find that audience that was so dedicated that they would be willing to go to the comic book shop every week. And yeah, that's when that – and that's sort of when that comic book culture started to be born, because before it was sort of like science fiction culture's little brother, little sister, you know. Mm-hmm. But then when the comic shops began and people start to sort of congregate at the comic shops, that's when that culture and that sort of society of fans began. And that's sort of where the comic book convention culture grew out of too, which is, as everybody knows now, is just sort of this runaway phenomenon.
Right, right. Well, and you actually are going to be at the very first Cedar Rapids Comic-Con.
Yeah, that's pretty smooth how
February.
I did that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's less than a month away, and it'll be Cedar Rapids' sort of first dedicated Comic-Con, and it'll be, I think, the 6th of February. Yeah, I think you said it. Yeah, and it'll be downtown at the DoubleTree.
Cool. So as this comic book shop culture grew, obviously a lot more people could find what they were looking for, and a lot more genres could get exposure. Do you feel like the barrier to entry got higher as well? Or what do you
lower,
think?
Lower, way lower. Lower. Yeah, because all of a sudden there were so many more publishers. And also because drawing comics is pretty hard. You know, you have to have a pretty advanced skill set. So the people that are really good at it sort of, as you know, they sort of took all the jobs at Marvel and DC. And all these new publishers sort of had to take people who weren't ready, like me. When I was, you know, I was not ready when I started in comics. I may not be ready now. I don't know.
I think a lot of people would argue with you
okay,
on that.
Okay, but when I started, I was definitely not ready. But there were so many publishers. They had to hire people like me. And it was cool because then you got to see people that had maybe a little more quirky styles or individual voices. And I think it led to sort of this proliferation of like really unique, interesting takes on not only comic books in general, but on the superheroes that we came to work on later.
Well, that is really interesting because if you think about the big comic books from Marvel and DC, there, of course, were many generations and have been mm-hmm. many generations of artists that have drawn those comic books. And the look has changed, but there are the fundamentals that still harken back to the people who created those
yeah.
characters. So drawing for those big titles, do you feel like you're imitating somebody else, or do you feel like you're making a Phil Hester original?
No, I always feel like I'm doing my own thing. And that's sort of the beautiful thing about comics is there's not a ton of money at stake like there is in movies and television. So, like, they don't get bent out of shape if I come in and I draw Batman's ears a little bit longer than the last, you know, person drawing Batman. And, you know, an individual voice or a quirky talent is a little, it's valued, you know, we don't worry about taking big chances on things like that. So yeah, everybody has sort of their Batman, you know, he's such a universally, you know, recognizable character that you can come in and mess with him and you can still tell it's Batman. So yeah. So we look for those strange voices to freshen those, you know, what could become old and worn out characters.
Or heaven forbid retired.
Yes. Yeah. No, everyone's 29 forever in comics.
Well, what about for readers? Do you think that the barriers to entry have changed for readers? Because you don't pick up the comic book at the grocery
yeah.
store when you go with your mom or dad anymore.
Yeah, certainly. It's a lot different now. I mean, with the rise of like online services like Comixology, you don't have to go anywhere to get your comic books now. And a lot of great comic books right now are not distributed in print at all. They're web strips. And there is zero barrier between you and being a web cartoonist, which is beautiful, I think, because before you...
Although it's probably hard to get paid for
it. Oh, yeah. It's super hard to get paid for it. Yeah. I know people doing it that you'd assume were... Because they're popular, you'd assume they're making good living at it, and they're not really. So, yeah, it's hard to monetize. But at the same time, it's good to see all these voices that were not necessarily shut out before, but maybe there wasn't room for them. And now they don't have to wait around for anybody. They can just go do their thing. And it's great to see, especially like you were talking about in the last segments, women cartoonists now you know, they don't have to wait for entry into this, what was previously a boys club. They just start making their own comics. I think the most popular cartoonist in North America right now is Raina Tegelmeyer. And she's never worked at Marvel in D.C. She doesn't have to. She's done these great sort of younger reader books called Smile and Drama.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have those at my home.
Yeah,
I should have known her name.
They're huge. And or I think probably the funniest cartoonist working now is Kate Beaton. And she does a book called Hark a Vagrant. That's a collection of her online strips. But they're online strips. She doesn't wait around for anybody. She doesn't wait around for a publisher or an editor. She just does them. And, you know, there's all these cool new pathways to success now that I think make comics more exciting than ever.
Now, for those of us who don't spend time in comic book shops, can you give us an idea of the array of genres that there are now? I mean, we know we've got the DC and Marvel, but even within that, there are so many different things going
on. Oh, yeah. I mean, superheroes still dominate, of course. That's sort of the prime mover of the comic book business. But even inside of a place like DC, they have a wing called Vertigo that caters to older sort of college age readers and more sophisticated storylines and, you know, sometimes a little nastier. But, you know, it's there's the superhero, there's science fiction. Image Comics right now is the third biggest publisher. And sort of their ethos is everything but superheroes. And it's a great time to be not only a reader but a creator. It's sort of a second golden age, I think.
Why do you think it's so effective for you, for anybody, to tell a story in this way?
Because I think I'm going to get all weird on you, but I think because comics sort of represent the best of film in that they're visual and compelling visually, but also reading a comic book has that same sort of – you have that same sort of personal relationship that you have with a novel. So it hits this little sweet spot where you control the pace as a reader, but you also get that sort of that thrill of the visual information that you get from a film. So it's sort of like a film, but you're at the toggle switch, kind of, you know, speeding it up and slowing it down as you'd like. So it combines reading and watching, which I think is a really interesting place.
Now, I have interviewed a number of comic book writers and artists over the years, and I really enjoy graphic novels. I'm not a particularly visual person. Mm-hmm. I love words, and I just rip through them, like, really fast. And then I think, why aren't there more words? Can we have more
words? No, that's okay.
Words?
I mean,
but how do you read one?
Well, ideally, you don't know how you're reading one. If you're in the hands of a really great cartoonist, you don't realize you're going fast or slow. You're taking in everything as it sort of pours into your eyes. And, but like you said, if you're not a visual person and you like the wordplay, you can tear through it. But if you're somebody like me who is interested, I'm like, oh, wow, look at the way they drew that rib cage on that character. You know, I can slow down and sort of savor it as well.
And when you write a comic book, I can imagine it that the writing is more like writing a screenplay.
Pretty much exactly like writing a screenplay, yeah.
So you're describing what the picture should look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it depends on what kind of relationship you have with your artist or if you're the artist. You change that, you know, as you go.
You have done writing. You have done the drawing part of this. Do you often combine both?
Yeah, I'd love to be able to write and draw everything I do. But it just depends on how different publishers see me. Some see me as a writer. Some see me as an artist. And I'm okay with that. You know, that's great. I love doing both. So, and right now, I'm pretty much 50-50.
And what are you working on right now?
Right now, I draw a book for Image Comics called Thrilling Adventure Hour that's based on the podcast, The Thrilling Adventure Hour, if anybody knows who that is. And I do the Beyond Belief stories. I adapt those into comics. And then as a writer, I write a book called Mythic for Image Comics as well with artist John McCrae. And that's sort of a weird, I don't know how to describe it. It's sort of like what if heaven had janitors, you know? So it's about sort of the world of magic and the world of, you know, strange gods.
Wow.
But there's like this maintenance crew that makes sure all that runs smoothly. And it's about that maintenance crew.
What are you most excited about reading right now? What are the titles that get you going?
Oh, there are a ton of great books out right now. I think probably Image Comics is not just because I work there, but Image Comics is sort of like this this great, at the forefront of all these cool new voices in comics. And probably the best, I think everyone sort of generally recognizes that Saga is the best new book out right now, and that's written by Brian K. Vaughan. And another book I really love called Southern Bastards, which is written by Jason Aaron, who's a friend of mine, and drawn by Jason Latour, another friend of mine. But they're both – those guys are both huge stars in mainstream comics, but they went off to Image to do their sort of redneck revenge comic that they love so well called Southern Bastards.
Are you still surprised by things you see in comics? I mean, this – it seems like just we're continuing to expand and expand.
Yeah, it's really cool because, you know, like I said, superheroes dominated for so long. But now I think the tastes of the – not only the comic book reading populace, but the culture at large is more accepting of comics that just want to go off and do their own thing. And, yeah, every time you walk into a comic book store, you're going to find something new or something strange, hopefully strange, you know.
How do you feel about the – I know that you were – partially involved in Ant-Man, which came out during the summer, now out on DVD. But how do you feel about how big Avengers have become in the movies now?
It's really like surreal for me because, when I was – the idea that we'd ever see a superhero on screen was like such a strange thing to us. And to see everybody into those, like to see – like I said, the idea that my great aunt knows who Thanos is now is weird to me. Nobody should know that. Like that, all that stuff that used to be just ours is now belongs to the world at large. And, you know, it's strange, but it's also beautiful.
Is there any part of you that's like, oh, come on, that's mine?
I always want to say, you weren't here for the real struggle.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You're just here for Robert Downey Jr.
Phil Hester, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. And Phil Hester will be part of the first Cedar Rapids Comic Con, which is coming up in February 6th in Cedar Rapids. And also Ant-Man, you were involved in that. That's out on DVD now. So we can, and we were just talking about all of the great work you're doing. So there's a lot of Phil Hester out there. Phil Hester is a comic book artist and writer who lives in North English. This is Talk of Iowa.